Hello, welcome to the Rubik's Mental Health and Wellness Podcast. We'll be talking with community members about how to live our most meaningful and fulfilling lives. For an overview of the Rubik's program, please listen to the introductory episode. Hi, welcome to the Rubik's Preventive Mental Health Podcast. Today we're going to be talking about the emotional category of mental health and wellness. And I have a really fun guest with me today. I've been looking forward to this interview for weeks and weeks. Dr. Marcia Gunstler-Stevens is here to talk with us today about emotional wellness, and she is the director of the Stamp Student Union at the University of Maryland at College Park, and also teaches courses both in women's leadership and adjusting to university life, and has made a really deep impact on many, many students, I'm sure, including my own daughter. And we love her, and I think the two of us could talk for hours, and if the three of us were together in a room, it would be the end. I don't know even what would happen. I think the talking would just never stop. So Dr. Gunstler-Stevens is just an amazing, grounded, wise, generous, and fun person to be around, and I hope you all get to experience that during our conversation today. So without further delay, welcome, Dr. Gunstler-Stevens.
Thank you, Z.
I mentioned that you teach the university life course and that my daughter took your course, because I want to start by talking about how that has impacted me and my daughter already. She was really inspired by a lot of the conversations that you all had in your class. And my understanding is that quite a bit of what you talked about in that class was anchored around a couple of books that are certainly recognized as classics in the area of psychological wellness. One was Tuesdays with Maury.
Absolutely.
And I want to talk a little bit about a couple topics that Mitch Albom talks about in Tuesdays with Maury. And then the other one was, of course, Dare to Lead by Brené Brown, who really has a lot of traction in the self-awareness and psychological wellness community as well these days. And I want to talk about especially courage, leadership, and vulnerability when we talk about that. And those are all, of course, components of emotional wellness and self-care, as we decided we're going to talk about a little bit in depth today. So first, I just wanted to ask you what exactly it is that you want your students to learn as far as developing their emotional wellness as they're coming into adulthood and independence in the university community.
Sure. So I've been teaching UNIV 100, a first-year course. I happen to teach all biology and chemistry majors. I was an undergrad biology major, so I have great empathy. but part of what I've always done, and I've taught it now for 34 years, is really helping these students who are making a fairly significant transition, many of them moving out of the household, going into their own space, creating their own lives, really thinking about what are the gifts and talents you bring with you? How do you leverage those? Mm-hmm. But also the fact that life is not going to be the same. And this won't be the first transition you're going to make, but how do you sort of acquire skills and talents, including a number of failures and a number of missteps that you make meaning of, so mm-hmm. that you can begin to be a bit more resilient, a bit more resourceful. And so part of it is to sort of avail my friends across campus, upper-class students, folks in resource areas, to sort of help students understand what's there, but also help students understand you got a lot of it inside of you already.
Mm-hmm. I love the idea of helping kiddos understand that they have the tools inside themselves, because I feel like a lot of times, especially when we're talking about something like emotional wellness, we look outside. And we were talking a little bit about, I have a concern about when we talk about self-care, folks going, okay, well, I need to go get a manicure and that's self-care, or I need to pay somebody to, you know, prep my meals for me, which is a strategy, but
absolutely.
But the idea that someone else has to fix this, or I can buy something
sure.
to fix this, I feel like is almost, it's almost a cause of a lack of wellness and happiness, for lack of a better word, as opposed to a solution to it.
You know, it's interesting because I think one of the things we think about in colleges and universities is that in many respects, students are disassociating from parents, right?
Mm-hmm.
And up till then, maybe some of how you've solved your problem or taken care of yourself is really engaging your parents in that care. And parents have a hard time letting go as well. But this idea that, like, you, if you spend a little time listening to your own head and heart, you might find the answers more clearly than if you just let the facial or the trip to talk to a group of friends or even, you know, I often think we have a long list waiting to get into the counseling center. And there's often this desire to have this other individual validate something or help you get to the bottom of a really difficult issue. And that is, the act of asking for help is amazing. But we've also brought some students into a group setting where literally we're giving them three different skills before we ever send them into counseling. And 70% of them don't do the counseling because they feel like, I just found out I've got the resource inside of me with a little bit of help.
Mm-hmm.
And if I avail myself of it, good. Mm-hmm. I can use it.
You're doing a sort of, not mini or limited, but a different version of what Rubik's actually aims to do. Where instead of saying, who can fix this for me or what medication can I take? Medication is helpful in some contexts, but instead of expecting that the medication is going to solve all your problems, acquiring some strategies for fixing a very focused or targeted problem.
Sure.
And it does strike me that what you're aiming to do is almost to sort of be the person that doesn't re-parent or new parent, but transitions kiddos from needing parents to being able to care for themselves and then those around them.
That's right. That's right.
I should stop calling them kids because they're adults
But
they seem so young still.
I know. Well, and you know, I think one of the interesting things is they've been my most significant teacher. So I think about often one of the assignments we do is you have to spend what would normally be a two-hour period of class, and you have to go away. And you have to spend 2 hours, however you can reflect best. Some of them jog. Some of them, you know, they haven't been to the rec center in a while. Some of them go to this garden on campus. Some of them bake brownies. You know, like, but how do you spend time listening to your own head and heart? Because particularly in a community where you're surrounded by other people, there isn't a lot of quiet space.
So do you specifically ask them to go do this individually?
I said, like, if you need to be in relationship with someone, some people say, like, I haven't talked to my best friend in so long. I needed to talk. Like, how do you find something that gives you joy?
Mm-hmm,
and sometimes it really is to make a list of things that have gone well and a list of things that are pissing you off, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's to immerse yourself in something that re-energizes you,
mm-hmm.
or to listen to yourself because you've been so overwhelmed by social media and the roommate and folks down the hall and the assignment that's due that you've stopped listening to yourself.
Yeah.
Folks who transition to college often talk about if they were drivers, if they drove cars when they went to high school sometimes, that quiet time coming to and from school became their period of reflection. Absent that, because they're now walking to class, still surrounded by people,
mm-hmm.
it's how do you re-plug in intentional time for reflection?
Yeah. So the assignment specifically asks them to reflect and do something enjoyable.
Yeah.
And finding a little bit of enjoyment every day is one of our measures of emotional wellness. So do you hear from them when they come back from that assignment? I realized I need to schedule this in. Tell me a little bit
about
that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So early on in the semester, they're asked to respond to some questions. One of the questions being, what did you used to know for sure you're not so sure about anymore?
Hmm.
Really intriguing question. It's everything from, I used to believe I was going to fall in love and stay in love and I just got dumped, you know, or, you know, my best friend and I were best friends forever and ever and that isn't working so swell anymore. So this sense of discovery. And so what this assignment sort of says to them is, are you taking time to, like, listen to your own head and heart, that sense of discovery, but also have you also rediscovered what may be absent from your repertoire that used to be really critically important to reframing or making life more filled with joy. And that can be everything from baking. Like, I don't know how many people bake when they have 2 hours free, but others running, others just sitting watching people because they've forgotten to be present.
Mm-hmm.
Others say, I read a book for fun.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are so used to reading organic chemistry or whatever it is
mm-hmm.
they're reading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially in that community that you're
yeah.
It all gets labeled as work a little
That's
bit.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
And then the other thing I notice about this assignment is that you asked that you're describing activities that that students are doing quite independently.
Right.
And so do you find that being able to enjoy themselves by themselves in solitude yeah. or independently is a challenge for young adults?
You know, it's interesting. All the research suggests this is the loneliest generation of college students.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is interesting when you think about the mm-hmm. fact that we are surrounded by people.
All the time.
All mm-hmm. the time. You know, and social media makes that even worse. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'm going to Snapchat you and keep you surrounded.
Right.
But what is it that makes us feel really lonely?
Yeah.
And some of, I think, what makes us feel really lonely is that we don't get a lot of time to make meaning of all those things we're experiencing
mm-hmm.
in company with other people, classrooms, friendships, going down the hall to the bathroom in college or whatever it is. I think it's sort of, how do you model that we're all so damn busy
mm-hmm.
and we're also engaged with others
mm-hmm.
in real or virtual ways that perhaps the person we're most isolating is ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you think a little bit about coming back into relationship with yourself?
Mm-hmm. That is so key. You have to start there so that you can then
yeah.
have real connections
yeah.
with people around you. And then I feel like the other thing there is you mentioned that it was okay for students to, if they needed to reconnect with a friend
yeah.
or have a meaningful conversation, that you encouraged them to do a meaningful engage in a meaningful
Absolutely.
Activity with another person.
Absolutely.
Instead of, you know, Snapchat makes you feel like you're with your friends all the
right.
time, but really what's going on in there, what you're really doing is competing a lot, you know, and comparing.
That's right.
Who has the coolest filter, who has the coolest whatever, who looks the best on the mm. beach, who's at the vacation for blah de blah. And that's, you're with people, air quotes, but you're not really in a community or a connection with
sure.
them. And that's almost more isolating
sure.
in a way. So it sounds to me like what you've also identified with this activity is that you can engage with other people, but it has to be in a meaningful way. And we so are lacking that to
yeah.
a great extent in our
I also
know,
think
current.
Sometimes, and I think this is true in our whole lives, we think we have to be perfect in all our relationships, right? So in some ways, we bring our best selves to relationships. You know, got to look good, got to look like I'm on top of everything. But in reality, are there friends or family members or somebody you adore who can see you at your worst
mm-hmm.
and who you can sort of wrestle through all the garbage to figure out what's really worth saving?
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, sometimes those really deep, meaningful conversations allow you to ferret out what's fabulous about you, but also to figure out what you learned from that
mm-hmm.
mess up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you, at the beginning of our conversation, had mentioned this idea of being brave, being resilient.
Yeah.
And so when we talk about being brave, there's the bravery or the courage required to jump out of an airplane,
mm-hmm.
for example. That's a kind of bravery
sure.
that's real. But you're talking about a different kind of courage, which is there's all this sort of self-awareness and responsibility and vulnerability tied into that courage.
Sure.
And I want to talk a little bit about how you see that developing in young adults and how you look to guide folks in the direction of the kind of courage that's going to lead to taking responsibility for oneself and others and having emotional resilience in the
sure.
in the face of challenges.
Sure. Two different trains of thought are going through my head right now. One is I work with veteran students a
mm,
lot.
Mm.
And one of the things I think about is we think about how courageous and they are amazingly courageous.
Mm-hmm.
But so much of today's military, and I've been working with Vietnam veterans for a very long time, so different era, different conflict. But so much of the psyche of today's military men and women is about the group. I'm fighting less for the cause, but more to protect
mm-hmm.
my comrade, my mm-hmm. Sister or brother veteran, and so or military person at the time. But I think about how when you put those same individuals, courage defined by all those, mm-hmm. you know, jumping out of planes, but you put them in a community that's different, college. The isolation and loneliness
mm-hmm.
when you've been a part of a unit or a team with a very detailed target
yeah.
can be equally off-putting, right?
Yeah.
And maybe even more so.
Yeah.
So you begin to wonder, who am I? What's my purpose,
mm-hmm.
right? Do I have what it takes? Am I going to fail? And in some ways, their resiliency is tested in a way different than in battle.
Mm-hmm.
Put a college student into a new environment, not at home, engage with new friend groups, and resiliency becomes really critically important. Greg Eales, an amazing man who died earlier this year. At the time of his death, he was head of the counseling center at Penn, but was previously at Cornell University. When he was at Cornell, he talked about resiliency and almost created a moniker so that you could figure out how you could help yourself
mm-hmm.
to create resiliency. And his whole thing was about saves, right? That at some level, part of what you were going to do in creating that resiliency S was that you were going to think about your social connections. How do I engage with other people to the assignment? How do I sit down with that really good friend and have that meaningful conversation? How do I join stuff? How am I curious about other people? How do I sort of share myself in social settings? A, that in this saves model, A is about attitude. That in some ways, what Greg Eales was talking about was learned optimism. That in some ways, we learn optimism by recognizing not everything is permanent. Like, people believe they're going to have a permanent record where they're going to know that you didn't do so well that semester in that class. No one knows mm-hmm. what I did in college at this point. pervasiveness, that if you mess up in one way, like you're not present for a friend maybe, that that's going to be who you are for the rest of your life, or all of your friends are going to hate you. It's not true. It's a single incident where maybe you stubbed your toe. Maybe you weren't present for someone. This idea about personalizing. I think often about how I say as well, I'm responsible for making everyone better. Well, in reality, that is not an assignment any of us can fully take on.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Eales talks about V and that saves model as values. And I have really grown to love sort of this idea about resume and eulogy virtues, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we're out working in our lives or in college or aspiring to go to college, at some level, we're acquiring resume virtues. You know, what is my SAT score? How am I doing in that class? Do I have 55 things I'm involved in on a resume from high school? I think those are all really important things. We in a college setting should teach people lots of stuff in a subject specialization. But the other piece is this eulogy virtue.
Mm-hmm.
What will they say about you when you die?
Mm-hmm.
They'll say, she loved well. She was a terrific friend. He made me feel like $1 million. You should have seen his humor. Whatever those things are, that's what we should be working to develop
yeah.
as well. And then finally, in the model, there are two other constructs. One is emotional acceptance
mm-hmm.
for yourself. Right? How do you love yourself? And sometimes that's the hardest person to love.
Mm-hmm.
But also, how do you engage in a way that allows others to know that they are loved? Zee and I were talking about, I really appreciate Melinda Gates, who I think is somewhat vulnerable in some of her more recent writings, talking about, you know, when you feel like a culture hates you, the thing in return is to find one person who loves you. That's how you survive. So how do you think about this idea about emotional acceptance, finding that one person that loves you, including looking inside.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final S in the saves model is silliness or humor. I often use humor, and I think about friends that are wrestling with cancer who you find the most crazy-ass way you can to support them in their really difficult journey. And so I had a friend who was in a very difficult treatment regimen, a very, very healthy person his whole life who suddenly became chubby. And I was like, well, sweet, we should make this happen. So he became part of the chubby club. Song, card-carrying member, all the rest of it. So in some ways, silliness and humor sometimes is what's one of the best ways to let go of what's bringing us down. It also enriches that emotional range.
I should have like been taking notes because there's a whole bunch of things I want to circle around in this saves. So one was, I love that you brought up specifically the resume versus eulogy virtues for a few reasons. You and I have been talking about a bunch of authors as pertains to this conversation. And one, of course, is David Brooks, who talks about these. And it strikes me that resiliency is part of why he needed to come up with this idea, because he talks, I've listened to interviews with him, and he talks about how he had to write The Second Mountain, his recent book, in response to the personal challenges that he has gone through over the past few years, namely breakup of a marriage and difficult relationships subsequently with his children because of that, and then a major reckoning for himself professionally. And so it sounds to me in his interviews that as a way of coping with those, as a way of finding resiliency, he investigated what mattered to him and came up with this idea of resume versus eulogy virtues. So I love that those were his solution to being emotionally resilient himself.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to talk about in the saves is you mentioned, oh God, now I lost my train of thought. Oh, it was the silliness.
Yeah.
Okay, so silliness. So you were talking about finding humor and using silliness as a strategy for resiliency. And it reminds me, I don't know how familiar you've become in your relationships with various students with Bollywood movies.
Oh, sure.
So Bollywood movies are obviously, that's a whole universe out there. And back in the early 2000s, there was a movie that came out, and it was about a psychiatrist in India, and his whole thing was he used laughter therapy as a depression treatment.
Absolutely.
And the whole movie was about him doing these laughter therapy sessions. And he would start by having people literally just come in and fake laugh, and then they would start laughing. But then they would find ways to get each other to actually laugh. And just doing these laughter therapy sessions was a way that he was curing people from depression. And the other thing is, I actually have a role model in my own family, one of my mom's sisters, who very, very intentionally watches things like Saturday Night Live and other stand-up comedians and things like that to force herself to laugh on a regular basis. And it's very intentional as part of
her
strategy.
It's really good.
Yeah, strategy.
I think about this fall, we had John Mulaney on campus.
Mm-hmm.
8,000 people came.
Yeah.
Right? There were kids in the front row studying for exams while at John Mulaney. But John Mulaney integrated that into his act. And I think part of it was, even in the height of your academic pressures or whatever it is you're feeling, and it was a really rainy night, you know you need to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, seeking it on Netflix or wherever it is, or Saturday Night Live, I still stay up for it. Like, there's something inherently good, particularly in difficult political times, to being able to see the humor in this, because otherwise you'll be like sort of enveloped in the ugliness of life.
I have noticed that there's been a kind of a resurgence of Saturday Night Live over the past handful of years.
Yeah,
it's become important for folks to need to laugh for various reasons. So the other sort of the underlying part of the saves, because we're talking about saving, and you also mentioned a lot of adapting to a new environment.
Absolutely.
Right? So I feel like hand in hand with resiliency goes adaptability.
Absolutely.
So you find yourself in a new and very foreign situation. How do you deal with that? Do you just say, well, it's not my home situation, so I'm going to freak out?
Sure.
Or do you adapt? So what kinds of strategies do you see kids using, or do you try to help them identify for adaptability?
Sure. I think part of it is to find what has previously worked for you. I always think about students who took art classes in high school who suddenly assume a major that has nothing to do with art, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't realize that that was critically important in their well-being, like to do, to create. So how do you find things that allow that creative side of you to continue to emerge, because that's a coping strategy. Mm-hmm. The other is just to figure out how you gain a sense of trust mm-hmm. with new people in a new environment, even to trust yourself. Because I think whenever you're in something new, if you don't know the language, if you don't know the space, you don't necessarily trust your own resources. Mm-hmm. So how do you sort of take an inventory 2 weeks into a study abroad experience or into going to college and say, what do I know now that I didn't know before? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's, I know how to get to class, or I know what time the showers are really busy, you know? Mm-hmm. So part of it is to know.
And then the other thing is that I wanted to, the other thing I remember now I wanted to go back to was the Melinda Gates idea of yeah. finding one person to love, yeah, even if that's absolutely. Just yourself. I had somebody, a young adult, say to me recently, I have a lot of trouble feeling close to my friends, mm-hmm. and I want desperately to feel close to them, but somehow I just can't. Mm-hmm. And I have to wonder if there was, that person was not only not finding one person to love in a new environment, but wasn't starting with that one mm-hmm. person being themselves. So yeah. how are you going to feel close to people around you or new friends if you're not first close with or, yeah. you know, acquainted with yourself?
Right, right.
And that skill of feeling love for yourself and feeling close with yourself, knowing yourself, might be, you know, built on a foundation of spending 2 hours doing anything right. that investigates how you on your own doing something that is nurturing for yourself, right. you know, or builds yourself up.
So at the University of Maryland, there's a Garden of Reflection and Remembrance. There are three different benches in that garden that have all-weather journals underneath them. Mm. People write in those journals. We fill up a journal about every 6 weeks.
Wow.
And it used to be if a student presented and said, I'm feeling anxious, depressed, I might even be suicidal. You would, sort of the protocol was, a staff member would go out and look at journal entries every day and sort of respond, hoping the person or individual who wrote it would come back. We don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. The community responds. In some ways, even the act of putting it out there, mm-hmm. right, to say, I'm really happy, I'm in, you know, I just found myself in love, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. To put it out there, you get some level of community regard. So I think there's ways to sort of, you know, reflect, but also get feedback. Mm-hmm. And it may be in these crazy journals. It may be in a friend group. It may be in a cause-related mm-hmm. Organization that allows you to play to your passion. Mm-hmm. And you feel something bubbling up from inside. I can make a difference. I have merit. Mm-hmm. I have talent and ability. And you're getting that reinforced by a group of people who similarly wants to affect that change or create
right,
that
right,
opportunity.
Right. Shared values Absolutely. Allow for that connection and yeah, absolutely. That's really cool and interesting, the community journal. And so are you saying that what you're finding is that folks would share concerns in there and then other folks would
absolutely.
Come and respond? And did you find that people sort of said, you know, well, here's what I've done in that situation,
absolutely.
Like shared strategies?
Sometimes even to the point where they'll say, my therapist's name is X, mm-hmm, here's the phone mm-hmm, number. Mm-hmm. And so that happens. Sometimes it's, I have experienced that myself, or sometimes it's just, it's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
you've got mm-hmm, it in you.
Mm-hmm. We're paying attention.
That's right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. All right. We're going to take a little break and then restart for a second half of this conversation. Thanks for listening to the first half of our emotional wellness conversation. We're going to have a whole other component and we're going to dig even deeper. Thanks for listening and we'll get back to this next time.
Thank you so much for listening to the Rubik's Mental Health and Wellness Podcast. We'll return next month for more strategic conversation about how to live our most meaningful and fulfilling lives.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.